Hey, glad you can make it. And welcome to the Employee Cycle Podcast, where we talk to HR innovators, thought leaders, and even some disruptors about the latest in HR trends, HR tech, and you guessed it, HR data. Well, you've heard enough of me talking. Now let's start the show.
Hey, everyone, and welcome back to the Employee Cycle Podcast. I'm your host, Bruce Marable, CEO of Employee Cycle. You know us? We're your HR analytics dashboard that brings all of your HR data together from all of your different systems, ATS, HRIS, engagement, performance, Glassdoor, you name it. And we put all that data into one real-time, beautiful centralized dashboard just by putting in your API tokens and pulling in that data. But that's enough about Employee Cycle, because today we have an awesome guest, and I think we have a pretty fun topic that we've never covered before. So if all of you could help me welcome to the podcast Michelle Alton, who is an HR exec extraordinaire from multiple industries over her tenure in HR. Most recently, she was with the Publicis Group, and today we're going to talk about why HR is like parenting. Michelle, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you. Woo! Thank you. Great to be here. Great to talk to you. I'm sorry. It's just a real pleasure. Thanks so much for having me. I appreciate it.
Oh, we're so excited to have you on the podcast. So, Michelle, we always start off the podcast the same way. And that question is, how did you end up in the wonderful world of HR?
Well, I think since I'm a little bit more seasoned than probably most, it wasn't really a major back when I was getting out of college, but I wound up in HR quite accidentally. I did a couple of summer internships in an HR department of Xerox that was building a business and then the next summer taking it down. And I started out in a marketing job and got in a career development program at Citibank. And they had this job opportunity where you would look for jobs internal across Citibank, which that was like looking out in the street because it was a humongous 85,000 person company. And I was starting an internal mobility program for non-exempt employees where you would call up and listen to job postings on the phone. So I'm dating myself a bit, but you would apply for jobs across Citibank that way. And I started that program, and that was my first entree, which was really talent acquisition internally. And then I moved into a generalist role and in the investment bank, and the rest is history. Kind of looked at that as marketing. I was a communications major and viewed marketing people as a career path. So fell into it by accident, but have not looked back since. Been a long road.
Nice. Seemed like you've done a lot of HR in your time.
I have. I started out as a specialist, but because I think you need to ground yourself in something and be an expert in something. So mine was talent acquisition, but over the course of a lengthy career, have developed expertise in a lot of subjects. But, really have been the chief talent officer or generalist role and looked at all aspects of HR, from being a business partner to running a function for a company, and then most recently for a significant piece of a large advertising agency.
Awesome. So now our topic today is why HR is like parenting. And I'm sure there are a lot of listeners out there shaking their head, but then there are some other people thinking, where is she going with this? So let's just first start off with, why do you believe HR is like parenting? And then we can go into all the details and similarities of why they're similar, but then also why do you think it's different?
Great. Well, it's certainly not meant to be patronizing, because one could certainly say, well, she's saying that you're the parent and everyone is the child. And that's not what I mean. But I really look at HR as leadership and management. You do have to run a business. You're key to helping run a business through the talent side. But much like parenting, you're leading a family. You are caring about people and their success. You're role modeling behavior. You're giving feedback. You're highlighting mistakes and hoping to correct them so people get better at them. You're communicating. You're an empath. You are in tune to folks. So you're really helping shape a family. That's just a business family. So I don't mean it to be, that we tell people what to do and all that, but we are really the voice and the objective person who's got everyone's best interest at heart and caring about their success, much like you do in a family. I don't think we hire people or bring them on or work with them to see them fail. And I don't think anyone does that deliberately in a family either. So that's why I equate the two. There are certainly your days where you feel like you're parenting for paychecks because, you know, some days there are crazy things in the workforce that go on that feel a little childlike. But for the most part, you're really helping shape an organization and shaping a family.
Interesting. So one of the first things that came to my mind is that a lot of people on social media and HR influencers have said that you shouldn't necessarily treat your company as a family because you can't get rid of family. And so in that description of thinking of your business family, I'm curious, how do you feel about that if an HR listener was to say, well, you know what, Michelle, I think you're right, but I can't get rid of my child, whereas I can definitely get rid of this employee if they're acting up or they're not performing.
No, that's a great point, and I would agree with that to some degree, but I think it's all in how you do it. So my kid makes a mistake, I don't fire my kid from the family, right? You make a mistake at work, you don't get fired either, right? We try to have conversations. We try to treat people with respect, dignity, and support. And you give them those things so they hopefully will improve and get better. It's not an immediate exit from someone. There are times that you have to do that, but it's taking the same concepts of how you manage a family and managing the workforce like it. So, you know, unless somebody stole or did something egregious, hopefully you're not getting rid of someone right away. You know, there's a lot of discussion right now on feedback, which seems like an HR 101 basic, but it's one of those things that's fallen by the wayside. People don't do it because they're uncomfortable doing it. You do it in a family, but you do it in a family to help someone. So the feedback is really to help people improve. And if at some point you have to exit someone, it's all in how you do it. So I agree with that statement, but I think the intent is not to just dismiss people for one error and one mistake. It's really caring about people in a different way. And I think we've gone from one extreme to another in HR and just in management leadership with it. So I agree to some degree, but the whole key in this is feedback and how you treat them and how you go about it.
Got it. And I agree with that as well. I actually think there's a lot you can learn from business and family, and then also what you can learn from a family and business. I know my wife and I always joke that because we both work for ourselves and we're both in, let's just call it sales roles, we're negotiating all day. So we're professional negotiators. So by the time we get home, we already know how this is going to go. And we can already get through the BS very quickly because we both know exactly what each other wants. And it actually stops us from, you know, arguing ever, because we just understand that if we were to take a lot of business tactics into the personal, then it would be helpful. But with that being said, let's stick with this HR is like parenting. So I would like to dig into what are some of the areas that are most like parenting. I mean, I'm sure there's the emotional side. There's, as you already mentioned, the feedback. There's letting people fail on their own. You know, the cliche that if something's hot, sometimes you just got to let the kid touch it.
Mm-hmm, right. Absolutely.
Because if they never touch it, then they never know how hot it is. So what are some of the areas that you think for the parents out there who are also in HR, they can take those skills to the workplace for their job? And even for those who aren't parents, but just understand what parents go through, or they can just look at what their parents went through with them as a child. What do you think that they can take from parenting into HR?
And it's into HR and into sort of into leadership in general, right? When you're responsible for other people. So, you know, you just made the analogy of touching the hot thing. You know, too often I hear people, well, they made a mistake. I don't have the time. I don't have the luxury to train. I don't have the luxury to have that person make mistakes. But until you give a long leash for somebody to learn something, they're not going to learn, and you're not going to take the time. You're going to continually get the same results. So I think having patience to let people learn at a certain time frame and certain pace. I think we're just too quick. Everything is so time sensitive that we're losing our sense, you know, our sense of patience and having effective timelines for people. So I think that's a huge challenge. I think the other thing is, You know, we talk about being in tune to folks. When you have multiple kids, I only have one child, so I speak from my work family, but I see this with people who have multiple children, whether it's relatives, friends, what have you. You could have the same gender kid, same parents. They're not motivated. They're not challenged the same way. They don't learn the same way. They don't process things the same way. And that's really what goes with management and HR and leadership is you have to really get to know your staff well enough and personally enough. I'm not talking about, you know, what they're doing every week, and although I think it's important to connect with people, but what provides meaning at work? How do they learn best? What's going to motivate them? What's a goal of theirs? And by finding that out, you realize that you have a team of five. Five people need to be managed differently, just like you would at home. Your kids aren't the same. They may have the same rules, right? You apply the same rules and manners and morals and all of that. But how they learn, how they're successful, all is very individual. And I think taking the time to be in tune to what that is and learn about those folks is key. And I think the last thing is, I mean, there's a million things, but, you know, we talked about feedback and all that, is also being a communicator. Sometimes people shut down, right? But if something's going well, something's not going well, but you need to communicate with folks all the time and tell them what's working or what could be different or what's going on they might not be aware about, whether you're teaching them something that helps them be successful. So it's really being the educator also. That is like being a parent. I mean, kids ask a million questions. We all know the stage they go through where they ask why. Every question is why. It's kind of what we need to take to the workplace also is not just delegate something and tell someone to do something, but explain why, explain implications, have them ask questions, have them understand, and have them go off and do it the way they can best do it. So those are a few of the things I think people could take.
As I was thinking about you saying kids asking why all the time, it just made me think about a lot of the HR procedures that are put in place. And people think, why do I need to fill this form out? Why do I need to fill this out? Why do I need to go to this training? Why do I need to understand how to do this thing? And typically, as HR are rolling out those programs, why do I need to fill out this engagement survey? And so that's a great analogy. And that's pretty interesting.
Well, we don't do it because what happens, and again, I keep going back to the speed thing in which everyone's working. No one wants to take the time to explain things, you know, and I think there's HR's come a long way over the course. You know, I'm doing this for 30 plus years. So I've watched HR transform itself to being people they thought were just social workers, right, and the paper processors, to being critical business partners. But the underlying theme in things I read, whether it's Glassdoor or it's anything in LinkedIn or any kind of thing, is people still think HR is out to get them. And they don't trust HR and don't let somebody in HR hear this. And the reality is I can't speak for every place. But certainly the people that I know and engage in and are in this profession are actually the people you should trust the most, because HR people are the biggest cheerleaders. As I said earlier, we don't want to bring people in to see them fail. So you really want to encourage people. You want them to open up and tell you things, because how can you create initiatives if you don't really hear what's going on? And that's like those surveys, right? You just do this, complete this. Well, we want you to complete it because, and then the key is to communicate results and then involve people like you would in a family of making something better. So I think reputationally, we still have a long way to go because it's sort of the lack of trust is still there with HR. But I think the mindset has to be they're actually our biggest advocates, because the last thing I want to do is fill a bunch of open positions and not invest in someone's success and be refilling those jobs over and over and over again. You know, it doesn't make the HR person's life any easier with all of that. So I think recognizing that you need to trust HR until proven not to, right? Because everyone's got their own experience, but really view them as your biggest cheerleader because they're so invested in your success.
Got it. And so another thing that I was just thinking in regards to parents and HR leaders being the same is this concept that parents shouldn't try to be friends with their kids. And maybe this is a controversial topic, but I also think it's controversial in HR as well, where you have a lot of HR people saying, I don't necessarily want to be friends with my employees, because, excuse me, it puts me in a weird position. And so how do you feel about that? And what would you tell HR leaders out there who are trying to figure out what type of personal slash professional relationship they should have with their employees? Should they go to parties with them, especially if they don't know what's going to happen at the party? And then do they have an obligation to tell the company? How does that work?
Yeah, and it's an interesting point of view because I was thinking about it as I was talking earlier, and I was writing some notes down because I definitely have a point of view about this, and it's been different. I will tell you from an early experience, my very first job, I was friends with my boss, and my boss threw me under the bus for something, and I felt like it was such a betrayal, and I swore to myself, I will never be friends with my boss again. And I mean friends, like socialized everything. And it was first job out of college. I was 22 years old. And as I moved around and progressed up the ladder, I still kept that sort of feeling of I don't want to be friends, but I want to be collaborative and collegial. And that means, you know, getting to know people personally. You don't have to know every nuance of their personal life, but getting to know them as a manager or staff member, going out, but knowing that there's a boundary. You know, I never crossed the boundary or took advantage, because sometimes with too much familiarity, you can do that. So over the years, I've loosened up on it. And I think you need to, what I call myself a friend, with my staff, and I have great relationships with people who work with me. And I would view myself as an advocate and a colleague, but I've never compromised myself where I had to have a difficult decision, you know, to make, or a difficult conversation that I always knew that had to come first. So I think keeping that mindset of you can be collaborative, collegial, do social things. I think you have to limit what you do. I don't think you can be doing this all the time. You do have a, you know, I work with lawyers who say, I never go anywhere where there's alcohol being served at the workplace because it's going to be an issue. You have to know when to step away. But I think knowing people personally, getting to know them, but always recognizing there's a fine line and that you're still their leader and you are trying to do what's best for them. But if you have to do something that's difficult, you can still do it without being uncomfortable. And when I've had to deliver messages like that, I've couched it with, you know what, I'm really uncomfortable having to have this conversation because I know your heart's in the right place and I know you try this, but this is where you're falling short and I really need you to turn this around. So I'm a fairly transparent person where I recognize my own discomfort and put it out there a little bit. But it's there's a lot out there now where people are totally friends and that may work for them. I just think you have to just remember that there's a fine line in there and you don't want to cross it so you can still do your job effectively.
So another thing that I always think is interesting is when people say that, and I don't have kids, so I'm just going off of what other people say, how people say they love all their children equally, but a lot of people also disagree with that. And so when that comes to HR, how does that work? I mean, clearly you want to feel the same way about all the employees, and you definitely want all your employees to be on the same level. But sometimes there are biases, or sometimes there are things that you may see, excuse me, a different way for a specific person that you didn't see another way, which causes the bias. And then it almost gives you this, you love one of your, let's call them employee kids or employee children more than the others. So how do you deal with that?
Well, first it's to recognize, but let me just say that I have one child, as I mentioned. Well, he's a grown adult now, but the one kid. But I did my best parenting before I had kids. You know, you're the one who said, I would never do that with my child, and I would never bring them here and do this and that. And then you have a kid and you do all those things you never said you'd do. I was also, I always thought I did my best managing and leading when I didn't have a staff. Again, if I were running this place, you know, so we always think we do things differently until we're in it. So I think to your point of, you know, my mother will tell you that I love all my kids differently, you know, for different reasons. And I think about that often as I look at my siblings and I are different. I think about the teams that have worked for me and I care about them all the same and I love them all the same. But I value what they bring to the table sometimes a little differently, depending on what the need is. And that's just human nature, because if you have something that's going on the place to someone's skill, let's just say that you've got massive recruiting going on and you've got to pitch in and you've got to help your talent acquisition folks, you're going to be spending more time with them. So it would appear that you favor them more, but it's just what's going on in time. And I think recognizing that sometimes you have to realize where you're not giving attention to everyone and figure out how to do that. But those biases are definitely real. And sometimes when you have a performance issue on your team, it's more evident. But recognizing it, I think most people don't recognize it. And they don't know, they're not in tune. And then when the person leaves or has these issues, they're blindsided. I would say I'm aware of my shortcomings that way. And when I have that aha moment, I make a personal effort to go reach out to the others in a different way so they don't feel neglected without saying, I feel like I neglected them or treated them differently. So it's a matter of what's going on in the environment too. Sometimes it's work, sometimes it's a performance issue, you know, sometimes it's the workload. But I think, you know, who's your go-to person when your boss is calling you and you know you can always rely on them to pull a report or put something together for you or give you data you needed. So, you know, it's not always the favorite moment when you realize you've been doing something like that, but it's definitely real. And I think owning it and going to the person that you may not be giving the attention to and sort of highlighting and spending more time with them gets you some forgiveness there. People just want to feel valued, right? They just want to feel heard. They want to feel attended to. And it doesn't take a lot to do that. You just have to be aware that you didn't do it.
So I have another one for you. I'm actually having a lot of fun with this. So what about when parents feel like they want more for their children than it seems like the child wants for themselves? And a lot of times this happens, let's just say parents want teenager to go to college, they don't want to go, or they want them to play a sport or play a specific instrument, whatever the things are. You're being pressured to do it because the parent believes that you should be doing everything and as much as possible. Same way in the workforce. HR person might realize that a person has a lot of potential and it doesn't seem like they're living up to their potential. How do you take the parenting skill set into HR and communicate that and manage this situation where you think this person has a lot more potential and they're not living up to it?
Well, sometimes they're not living up to it and sometimes they just don't want it, right? And I will say that, you know, we're generationally, I think with the millennials, and I have a millennial, so I'm not speaking about other people other than myself. You know, there's been a lot of pressure put on them to do certain things. And what's happening is we're seeing that they don't want the same things their parents had. They value experiences over things. They care about changing the world in a different way than, say, a boomer did. And boomers, you know, have this mindset of how we were raised and drilled into, you have to go to school, you have to do this. And we've passed it on to our kids, which I think has created a whole other level of anxiety here that people, you know, are now seeing with this workforce. They are also inheriting student debt like, you know, no one ever has before. So it's a whole different world to put those pressure on them. It's hard because you do want the same or better for your kids than you had. So that said, you take it into the workplace. And I can tell you as a cheerleader and someone who develops talent, and I see something in someone, it's very challenging to get someone out of their comfort zone where they don't see themselves that way. So you spend a lot of time trying to mentor and coach someone, even if they don't work for you. I'm talking about as an HR person, you work across the business, right? I mentor and coach all my employees. And to have them see themselves a different way is a challenge. So it requires a level of social work, but it also requires some hard conversation. Do you really want this? Well, I do, but I don't have the confidence. I want to speak in a group. I'm afraid of this leader. And how do you work with them on little side projects to help them slowly step out of their comfort zone so that they're willing to take on something bigger? So that's with someone who wants to do it. I will tell you about a personal situation I had. I had someone work for me in one of my previous jobs, and I thought they had so much potential. And I thought, why don't I give them opportunity to learn and grow and create greater financial opportunity for them, right? For promotions and doing something different than what they were doing. And I would give them assignments. And I would give them writing assignments and explaining processes and documenting it because I thought writing skills would be great and it would really help them and they had a good brain. I didn't realize the stress. The person didn't want to tell me that they didn't want all that for themselves. They appreciated my wanting it for them, but they didn't want it. And what I did is I created this crazy stressful environment for both of us because they weren't living up to what I thought they could, but they didn't need to do it for the job they were in. I was just trying to project, how do I get you to do something that's going to get you more? And I didn't ask the questions, and I didn't. And if they were telling me, I wasn't hearing it, I wasn't listening. So that was a big defining moment for me, you know, as sort of the work parent of, and it was someone who was older than me too, on top of it. So it was me being a work parent, trying to want more for someone that they didn't want for themselves, and they were perfectly happy, and they weren't failing. They were going to stay where they were. And I needed to accept that. So hearing it finally, you know, and listening was, wow, you know, I was not in tune at all. I was not showing any EI. I was not reading the signs. I just wanted so much for that person. So I think you need to be aware and you need to ask the questions because it's really hard to want more for someone that they don't want for themselves, and just be happy and accept what they want for themselves, that they'll be happy and successful in what they're doing, even if it's at that same level for 30 years, you know?
And you said not showing any EI. One of the things we like to do is make sure that everyone understands the acronyms and terms being used. I'm assuming you meant you were referring to emotional intelligence.
I was. Correct? I'm sorry. Yes, I was talking about emotional intelligence.
It's all good.
Yeah. So, because I just had this desire. It was, and I have very strong emotional intelligence. I see more than I'd like to see, and I feel more than that because sometimes it's not positive and you don't want to see it. But I was so married to, I can get you, we're in a small company, I can get you to do something else and create greater opportunity and put you on projects. And I wasn't paying attention to all the little signals that they didn't want that. You know, they were perfectly satisfied and successful where they were, you know, so I really wasn't demonstrating it. And that was a big aha for me, you know, and, you know, that's another thing about parenting is we don't have all the answers. We think we do at the time, and we have to show the confidence that we do, but we have to show the ability that we're willing to learn from anyone. I learn from my son all the time. You know, I learn from junior employees. I learn from people who work for me. We don't have all the answers, but we try to have the confidence that we do. But I think being a parent too is also saying when you don't know something.
Nice. This was great. And now we're going to move to my favorite part of the episode, which is what I call the real, the random, and the ridiculous. Are you ready?
Okay. I think I am.
Great. The real question. Do you like bread pudding? And if so, how do you like it made?
Oh my God, I love bread pudding. If it's on the menu in any restaurant, I will always, always eat it. I like it with cubed bread, any kind of bread except with raisins, lots of cream, lots of sugar, and a nice syrup on top.
I love it. I love it. All right. Now that I know that we're bread pudding friends, next time I'm in New York, I'm going to make it happen.
Okay.
All right. The random question. What's the most important lesson you learned from being a parent? Or one of them?
I think to say you're sorry. To say you're sorry when you might have hurt your kid's feelings or made a wrong decision, and just show your vulnerability. I've tried to do that because I don't know that a lot of folks do that. And I know I definitely didn't grow up with that. So I made it a point to really try to say I'm sorry and recognize a mistake. My kid might point something out or something that hurt them or, you know, didn't feel so good. So I think saying you're sorry was pretty key.
I don't think people understand how many unnecessary things happen in the world, and they could have been stopped by saying I'm sorry. Wars, breakups, fights, all types of stuff. Sorry is very powerful. And then the ridiculous question. What do you think is one of the most ridiculous perceptions of HR today?
That we don't understand a business. That we're just social workers and we just don't understand what's going on with the business and the clients we serve. Because I think people are still looking at it as a function that, while it's a support function, it only worries about keeping everyone happy and satisfied. But it's, you know, that's a piece of it. But, you know, it's really understanding how the business operates, how talent can be developed to make the client successful, make themselves successful. So I think we're still struggling with that that kind of reputation from back in the 90s.
Got it. Well, Michelle, thank you so much. You've been an awesome Employee Cycle podcast guest.
Thanks. Woo! Thanks. Michelle! Thanks for having me. It's been fun. my maiden podcast voyage. Thank you so much. It's really been great.
Nice. So glad to know that I was your first podcast interview. This makes my heart smile. I'm so happy. So where can people find you online?
They can find me on LinkedIn. They can find me on Instagram. They can find me on Facebook. I'm not a Twitter person. I don't tweet, but those are my social media places. So,
all right. So we'll list all the socials for Michelle, except for Twitter, in the show notes. Well, thank you all for listening to this amazing episode. We would be nothing without all of you listeners. And if this is your first episode that you're listening to because you just had to hear what Michelle was talking about and you want to hear other amazing episodes as well, please subscribe to the Employee Cycle Podcast on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or whatever else you're listening to. And please, 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 if you like this episode or any other episodes, leave us a 5-star rating everywhere possible. That lets us know that we're providing great content. And last but not least, and HR and people ops leaders out there, you know what I'm going to say. Please continue to hire, train, and retain the best workforce possible. All right. Later, kids.
This episode of the Employee Cycle Podcast was edited and produced by Lux Podcast Production. Lux is a creative audio suite that helps clients create, market, and measure their show. Visit luxpodcasts.com to learn how a podcast can benefit your organization. That's LUXEpodcasts.com.